Hi, Dan.
Hi, Jason.
It's a watch order day, apparently.
Oh, yes, it is.
Did you watch order day. Did you watch order today?
No, I watched orders, but I didn't watch order.
You watched other people order watches?
Yes, watching.
I am the watcher.
Yes.
I watch.
I'm your guide on this journey.
Other people watching.
Yeah.
Apple Watch orders.
Watch, yes.
The Apple Watch.
Oh, I can't interfere, Jason.
Dan, the Apple Watcher. He lives on the moon.
That's right. That's what he does.
And writes for 9 to 5 Mac, I think. That's how that...
All the alternate histories, the things that got made and didn't get made, and, you know, what if Steve Jobs had continued being the CEO of Apple?
Sure.
You know.
Right. What if the Apple car existed?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. A possibility.
Uh-huh.
There's a dimension somewhere.
I am planning on buying an Apple Watch, but I did not place an order at 5 a.m. For a couple reasons. One is I was not going to wake up at 5 a.m. Mm-hmm. Open to the possibility of getting one at an Apple store because they'll have stock, because they always do. Yeah. So, and I think I may actually be on the review program where I may actually get a review unit, which is actually rare. I think that's only happened to me like 3 times in the life of the Apple Watch where I've gotten Apple PR. Like, the way it works, if you're not under an embargo, which I'm not, because I assume there will be embargo reviews. Generally, the way it works is if you're not under an embargo, is at some point Apple says we're going to give you a briefing and then we'll ship a product to you. Or in the old days, you'd go somewhere for a briefing and then they would give you a little bag with the product at the end of the briefing. And with Apple Watch, it's been real hit or miss, and I don't really understand why. I know this is super insidery, but like, I think maybe it's because it's simultaneous with iPhones so much of the time. Mm-hmm. And I'm on the radar of iPhone PR, but I'm not on the radar, I think, of Apple Watch PR. So the impression I get is like when they do the briefings together, or they scan, you know, prioritize the briefings, set up the briefings together. Sometimes I kind of like get included,
right.
But that's not the case this year. And I think that I'm actually in the program for that. So as a result, what that probably means is that I will probably get on or slightly before launch day, an aluminum watch as a demo, and I'll be able to try it out and write about it if that happens. But I am going to buy one. I just, you know, that makes it even less of a priority for me, because I don't need to get one quickly so that I can have it quickly, so that I can write about it quickly, because it sounds like I'm going to get one of those anyway. So, you know, again, reviewer problems, the least interesting of all problems. But I am excited about it because I am into the bigger screen and the brighter always on, because I do have the always on because I have a Series 5, but the brighter screen and the bigger screen. I love my Apple Watch and I use it. So for me, waiting 2 years, I'm gonna give myself a little gift this year.
Yeah, I'm on a 4, and I just had this moment of thinking about this morning. It's like, I'm not really coveting it for whatever reason. I mean, I think part of it is just I'm very happy with my 4. Like, it's not, I don't run into a lot of things where it's like, oh, you know, I wish it could do X, or man, it feels really slow, or the battery life is really not great. All those things are fine for me. Mm. And I, you know, I've talked to more Series 5 owners who run into battery life problems than I do on my Series 4. And I have to think some of that might be the always on stuff.
Could be. I haven't had it, but I don't know. I have the large watch and it hasn't been a problem for me, but
yeah. So but it's just, you know, I had that moment. If I looked at it, I was like, no, okay, it's going to cost me, you know, $450 or $470, and it's like, I looked at the trade-in, it's like, I could probably get $100 back for my current watch. It's like, is there something I feel like I'm desperately missing out on? And this year I was just like, I can wait. So we'll see. I mean, there's always, it's not to say I can't buy one later, right? Like,
right.
But didn't feel the need to order one.
I think that's perfectly fair.
And I was saying, I'm like sort of budgeting for a couple Apple things that I know I'm going to want to buy next year. And some of it's like, I'll save my money. And, you know, when that bigger iMac comes out, I'm going to want that. And I think I'm going to want a new iPad sometime in the next year. Yeah, so, you know, kind of budget for that. And we'll hold off. It's fine.
I think that's fair.
You don't need to buy things, is what I'm saying. No, you can if you, want to. If you want ahead. To. Yeah, but you don't need to.
I think that's right. I've been thinking about e-readers a lot lately. It's kind of this interesting confluence of things. So the iPad Mini came out, which is sort of the most readery of iPads. And I've been trying to use that a little bit and get a sense of how that works as a reading device. I have I watched that the Amazon announced a few weeks ago some new Paperwhite, a couple new Paperwhites, the sort of like mainstream Amazon e-reader. Kobo just announced their new e-readers, and I've been reading on a Kobo for the last, you know, I don't know, 9 months or something like that. And they have two new versions that they just released, or they just announced that come out next week, I think. And I've been testing this, my weird Android e-ink tablet, which I'm actually about ready to write about. And I've been thinking about all of these because I've been thinking again about like why I like the e-ink reader, the Kobo or the Kindle, and why I prefer it for some things, even though I have an iPad, and like, does the iPad Mini change the equation? And the Android tablet is fascinating because it's neither fish nor fowl. It's like an iPad, but with an e-ink screen. And there are things about it that I think are really interesting. And then there are things about it that I think are really terrible, because an e-ink screen isn't a phone, and all the apps that are running on it are phone apps, obviously, because it's Android, and they're not tuned for the. One of the things that I've come out of this with is an appreciation of the fact that something like a Kobo or a Kindle is specifically tuned for e-ink, and the apps like the apps don't scroll or anything; they page. And they know to refresh the e-ink so you don't end up with weird ghosting of the e-ink display, because an e-ink display is very different. And what it's made me appreciate is, most of all, I think, that while you can show anything on an e-ink screen, if the software isn't optimized for the e-ink screen, it's not that great an experience. Whereas if you go to an iPad, you're just embracing the fact that it's going to be a backlit screen and all the apps are work for that. But you have to, then you've got a backlit, you know, thing plus all the distractions of notifications and things like that, that you can do if you want to on iOS that don't exist if you're using a Kindle. I don't know. I'm still thinking about it. I'm at the weird point now where as a what I'm trying to do is pick out what makes me like the Kindle and the Kobo and like that device from the iPad Mini, because my gut feeling is that the iPad Mini is a much better product for most people.
Right.
And then so I have to go from that to, well, like, OK, if you're not one of those people, who are the other people who are not the most people? And why would the e-ink device be have appeal to them? It's just I'm still kind of wrestling with that one, because I'm not going to give up my e-ink reading. In fact, I bought one of those new Kobos to test out, but also because I will then use it. And I'm intrigued by what it can do, but it's not for everybody, right? An e-ink screen is, it is. I mean, it's a little bit like when we talk about, I think I mentioned this on Upgrade, the idea like of I have multiple iPads and things like that. It's like most people are not going to do that. So for most people, something like an iPad Mini is good because it is a multitasker. But there's something, I guess what I'm saying really is that there's kind of something to be said for a unitasker, but you've got to really like that task.
Well, I've had a Kindle for many years. I bought a Kobo earlier this year, and
which Kobo
really
do you have?
Those.
Do you have
I have the same one as you, the Libra.
Libra, it's good.
Yeah, and
H2O, which is code for first generation. Because now there's a Libra 2.
I was a little sad because I just bought mine and it's got a USB-C on it. It's fine.
Yeah, I mean there seems to be. I actually bought the bigger one because I want to see what that size is like. And I already have the other one doesn't seem that different. USB-C right. Like, right. It's fine. I'm kind of, I don't want to buy every Kobo and Kindle that exists, but I do want to know about them, so I bought the big one. Anyway, yeah, that's a good, right. That's my, I think if you want an ebook reader right now, the Kobo Libra is actually the right one.
I like it a lot better than my Paperwhite. My Paperwhite's a few years old, but I think the Kobo is, I think, superior in almost every way. The one exception being, you know, if you buy a lot of stuff on Amazon, obviously it doesn't work with stuff on Amazon. But sure. That's what I have the Kindle for, so it's not a big deal.
Right. And there is...
I like it.
And there is a DDRM plugin that you can use with Calibre, and it works, but it's hard to set up, and it's not a mainstream solution, but it can be done. Or you can just keep your old Kindle around. Yeah. That's
right, which is weird. It's the weird situation I live in now where I have two e-readers on my nightstand, and I had, for a little bit there, I was reading... I had books that were like one book I was reading on each. And I was like, I got to remember which book I'm picking
up. This is why Captain Picard has all those pads on his desk, because they're all from different DRM systems.
Yep. Yeah. The Federation did not fix that problem.
No. The one thing not federated in the Federation is its DRM. It goes planet by planet. It's the worst. It's like they're watching a movie, and then they pass into like Cardassian space, and all the movies shut off because they're not licensed for use in Cardassian space. It's the worst.
It's very bad. And ooh, I
the
like
dystopia of Star Trek DRM. No, Gene Roddenberry, you missed it. Oh no,
Star Trek colon DRM was my least favorite of the series.
Sorry, I keep interrupting you about while I'm riffing while you're trying to tell me things about your Kobo.
Yeah, I like the Kobo a lot. I think the form factor is better than the Kindle. The screen is better than the Kindle. The typography is much better than the Kindle in most cases.
I don't understand why the Kindle typography is so bad.
It's
even
very
with the
weird.
Same fonts.
Yeah, I don't get it. It seems much worse. Like I remember being blown away the first thing I started reading on the Kobo. I was like, whoa, why is this so nice? This feels like reading a book.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I find it great. I have zero complaints about my Kobo. I like the OverDrive integration, although it is still a little thorny to get it set up to work exactly correctly. I had to do some stuff where it turned out like, I've got multiple library systems, and getting that to work was like, you got to go through OverDrive and like set up your account so it notices stuff, and it's fine. Once you get it running, it's okay, but it's definitely a little annoying to get running. I like it a lot. I haven't really bought much on Kobo to read there. I think I've mainly been using it for either, library stuff or sideloaded stuff.
Yeah.
And that's fine for me at the moment, like, because that's the predominantly what I've been reading these days. But occasionally I still have to read stuff on Kindle, and then I'm like,
Kobo
run through it.
Has a feature that is maddeningly not on the Libra, that is Dropbox integration. But on the higher end Kobos, so I'm going to try this out with this one that I bought. On the higher end Kobos, you can link it to a Dropbox folder and basically just drop stuff in it, and it shows up on your Kobo. And I thought, well, that's really interesting, because then sideloading is now just a cloud-based service.
Yeah, that'd be nice.
That's pretty good.
I will say that the biggest issue I've run into occasionally with that is I was reading a couple pre-release books that I had gotten my hands on, and they were done via... the NetGalley service, which uses Adobe's DRM scheme.
Adobe Digital Editions,
That is a garbage fire. That setup is terrible.
It is. I got it to work with the Kobo, but
it wasn't pleasant.
It is everything. When you hear Adobe DRM...
Oh my God, it's so bad.
The conclusion you leap to from those two words... is exactly as bad as you think it's going to be.
I think I gave up on trying to load one of them. I was like, I'm just going to put on my Kindle, because it's integration is so much better with that.
Yeah.
But I like jumped through some hoops to get one of them working. And the biggest, I don't know what's going on with this one. This is the one book I've run into on the Kobo where I opened it up, and I'm like, oh man, the text is really small and everything is single spaced. Like, I need to adjust the reading. And when I adjust it, nothing changes.
Weird.
I don't know why. So that one, and I think it's because it must have something to do with the Adobe setup I did or something.
Gotta be. But
I can't change the font. I can't change, like, I can do it. I say, do a new font. And it's like, yep, we changed the font. I'm like, it looks exactly the same. Make the text bigger. We've made the text bigger. It's the same.
For the for reference, the one that I bought is the Sage, which is basically like the Kindle Oasis. It's the 8-inch, in this case, but it's the high-end ebook reader. They have a little stylus like the Android one I've got. They got a little stylus so you can do like handwritten notes and stuff. Not interested. No, thank you. But anyway, I'm getting that one to test. Yeah, I think the so much tech stuff is about, like we were saying with the Apple Watch, like buy, new. The fact is, you know, people buy stuff and that's great, but you don't always want to buy stuff and you don't need to buy everything. And I'm always amused when people get angry when Apple releases a product that's not for them, right? Like, this is the most weird anger ever, which is like, everything Apple makes should be for me. I'm like, no, it shouldn't. And it's okay. And that's how I feel about the e-reader thing. And I've always felt like some of the anger about e-readers is that they're not for everybody.
Sure.
I'm always reminded of Alton Brown saying, you know, why do anything with a unitasker if you can instead do something that's a multitasker? I get that, but if you really care about the one task,
yeah,
that's
sometimes
when,
it's better.
Sometimes it's better. And like, I love the e-ink screen. I really do. I wish. Here, this is going to be something I say about the Android thing too, which is like, I wish I could take all the stuff that I do reading on my iPad and put it on the Kindle, but only if it's again, bespoke Kindle or Kobo app that knows it's e-ink and that knows it has page turn buttons and is like going to let me just do it that way. And I think the truth is that means I don't want those things, because I don't think those things, for the most part, like Kobo has Pocket integration and there's this Dropbox thing. I would imagine that I could probably do some automation that would do just wild stuff to pull content off the web and drop it in Dropbox for use. Sure. And all that. But it's like, maybe in the end, I don't actually want those things. And maybe having a place where I can retreat from all my notifications and from the temptation to scroll Twitter is the thing that I actually like the best about having. Plus, the battery life goes on forever. But like, maybe those are the reasons that I really like the ebook reader, is that, like Captain Picard's stack of pads on his desk, maybe it's kind of nice to have a device that's like a haven, a refuge, where you go and the rest of the world just kind of falls away. And that is totally what the Kobo or the Kindle is for me.
I mean, it's the reason I spend a lot of time reading before bed is to like disconnect.
Yeah.
And I don't want to do that on my phone.
Bloop,
because
push notification.
Yep.
And you could turn
and
off
I can
all
turn
your
them
notifications
off, and I do.
And, stuff,
and I do. But the temptation is still there.
Yeah,
I know
Slack
that
is one
that
swipe away.
Yeah. And it's like, oh, I could check Instagram and see what photos before going to bed. And it's all that stuff. And it's like, you know what?
I'm done with that.
There's a time to put that aside for the night and just pick up a book. And if it's on e-ink versus on paper, it doesn't really matter. I get the same experience, you know, in terms of that aspect of it. I get that same single focus experience there.
Right.
Regardless. And that's fine. That's what I want.
Yeah, I think so. I read a newspaper on my Kindle for years. And now I do that on iPad. And it's superior in some ways to do it on the iPad, mostly due to timing, because in a newspaper app or on their website, you're getting whatever the latest is. Whereas on the Kindle, you were getting a bundle that was sent in the morning that was basically, here's the news from yesterday. It's basically today's newspaper. And so if you check any other time other than the morning, you're not going to get anything new that's happened during the day, right? But there was a bit of superiority to the experience because it was the focus part of it too. I don't know. It's funny. I think this is the real challenge for. I'm pivoting to like a broader part. Let's see where this goes. When you're making an array of devices, the you know, that constellation of devices that's on your body and around your house and all of that. And one of the challenges is unitasker versus multitasker, right? Like, one of the challenges going forward is, if we found the multitasker, and it's the smartphone, you know, or the computer, if you want to say that. But like, but they want us to buy these outlying products, Apple Watches and smart home things and e-readers and whatever else. Like, the challenge is, how do you make those things fit in a way that people see value in them beyond what they've got in their core devices? And this is a whole spectrum, and it goes from the obvious, like, well, a smart light bulb is not a smart watch. It's like, great. Yeah, I get it. But like, do you need an Apple Watch? Well, no, but maybe it would be good. Do you need an e-reader? Well, no, I could do that on my phone or my iPad. Do you need an iPad? Well, no, not necessarily. I can, but it's got a bigger screen, right? Like, it becomes, it stops being, do I need to buy a thing because it lets me do a thing? Mm-hmm, and becomes, mm-hmm. Do I want to buy a thing because it does a thing better or differently than the stuff I already have? And I'm interested in that because it's a different kind of, right, sales process. Is it different? Like when you got the Amazon Echo for the first time, right? It's sort of like, is it necessary in life? No, but is it tapping into an interesting thing that makes you actually want to have this device in your life? Yes. Like, I think that's really interesting because it's not necessary, but yeah, it's nice.
It's interesting. This whole topic dovetails with something that I actually wrote my macro column next week on.
Ooh.
Yeah, it's always interesting, the synergy. There was an interview that Tim Cook gave this week, I believe, with Bustle.
Right.
And he talked about mental health and its integrations. They're sort of pumping up this Shine app that they've done some, partnerships with. But what I thought was interesting was that he specifically commented about, like, technology working for you and technology not succumbing to the endless scrolling, right? The kind of what we were just talking about with, you know, a unitasker as opposed to a multitasking device. And he was like, you know, I've always thought technology should work for you. And, you know, of course, we've integrated some technologies that let you sort of keep track of the time you're spending and isolate and do things like that. But, you know, it's always a challenge. And I thought to myself, well, you know, this is arguably a problem you have created for yourself by making these devices that are so capable at what they're doing. And I'm very curious to see how Apple deals with that going forward, because I think that the story of things like the tablet and the smartphone have been immense capability, but they also come with all these, you know, sort of the double-edged sword of being these things that we get sucked into. And looking at Apple's trajectory over the next decade, two decades, or whatever, I'm kind of curious to see whether that is something they want to and feel like they can get away from, which might mean a prevalence of going back towards things that are perhaps, you know, adding things to their lineup that are perhaps more unitasking solutions. Mm-hmm. And I think technology in general has started to, in some ways, move that way. I think particularly about stuff on the smart home, right? Most of the stuff that you, like a smart home device, is kind of a unitasking device, right? It's, yeah, a smart light, or it's a camera, or it's a doorbell, or something like that. And we proliferated our number of devices, but, you know, it also means a different model of interaction. Right. Nobody stands and scrolls endlessly on their Echo. You can't. It doesn't really work, right? You hit it for a task, and then you're done, and you move away. Nobody, you know, spends time doom scrolling through Twitter on their Apple Watch either, right? Because it's not well suited to that. So I'm intrigued by this idea of, are we moving as sort of a course correction towards devices that will have more devices, but they'll perhaps be targeted at specific things and thus take sort of some of the attention or onus off of these multitaskers? So, like, maybe, like, you talk a lot about how you go out and you don't carry your phone with you.
Yeah.
Like, you wear your watch, right? And it's like, there's an argument to be made there. It's like, well, if you can still do everything you need to do while you're out on your watch, but it removes the possibility of some things that you feel like, well, those would be nice, but I don't need. I don't need to be able to read Twitter. I don't need to be able to read Slack. It's nice to get messages or whatever, but I don't need to spend all my time, right, consuming it.
Take a picture is the one that gets me that from
is,
time to time.
That is,
right?
That is a tricky one, sure. Yeah. So maybe cameras will make come back. I doubt it. But it is interesting in thinking through, like, well, now that we have created this incredibly powerful technology that fits in your pocket, where are we going? What's the idea?
Right, right. What's the next frontier? And I think that some of these devices are better unitaskers than others, and sure. You know, you get your Amazon robots and stuff where you're like, okay,
sure, yeah.
Is that a task at all? But I do think it is. I agree with you. It's fascinating, the idea of sort of like, if the tech industry is not going to just say, all right, we fixed it, smartphones, yay, we're done.
Right.
And they're not going to do that. They're going to at least try. But then we, like, just because the smartphone was such a good sell doesn't mean anything else is going to match it ever.
Sure.
Right. Yeah. I feel like I try to temper my feelings about the smartphone with the whole end of history argument, because it's a fallacy, right? The idea that after the Cold War ended, everybody's like, oh, well, good. Now we've got a new international order and it'll be like this forever. And people legitimately argued that. And it's like, not as Dr. Manhattan taught us, nothing ever ends, right? Like, there's no ending. It just keeps going on and on and on. Or, as Steve Perry told us, the movie never ends. It goes on and on and on and on. Just quoting Journey right next to Watchmen. Sure. That's me in a nutshell. So this is my point about smartwatches or smartphones, is I don't want to say there will never be a product like the smartphone that is that dramatic a change to society, because that's not true. It never is a word you don't want to use, because it's never. Right? Never say never again.
Yeah.
But I think we misunderstand the importance of the smartphone at our peril when people say ridiculous things like, is the Apple Watch going to be as big as the iPhone or something like that? That was the one that always got me. It's like, nothing for a long time is probably ever going to be as big as the iPhone, because smartphone as a concept of a computer that fits in your pocket, that goes everywhere, that's on a high-speed internet connection, like, that's the transformative product of our era. And and I've argued before, and I'll say it again, I think the whole personal computing era, the era of the personal computer, is more now, from this vantage point in history, more accurately seen as the prelude to the smartphone.
Yeah.
Computers, they're great. Laptops, even better. We can take them with us. Oh, now you can literally just carry it everywhere on your person and be on the on the network and get everything you did, right? So that's done. And while everybody's spending millions of dollars trying to invent glasses or, you know, brain implants or whatever the next thing might be, other than that big transformative thing, we're left playing around the margins. And that's what we're talking about, you and me, which is like, how do we take all this software, all this battery technology, the ability to build these tiny things that last for a long time, drones and a little autonomous robots and all these smartphone sensors and all the stuff that has revolutionized, like putting little CubeSats in space with smartphone tech. Like, we've got incredible building blocks driven by the smartphone revolution. What next, right? And so everybody is tinkering in the edges. And I feel like, barring another huge breakthrough, we're going to spend the next 20 years figuring out what the things are that go... Now that smart devices can exist in very tiny places, very tiny niches in an ecosystem, what are those niches? And nobody knows, right? Because we didn't have this power before, you know, 10 years ago.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's really interesting. And... I don't know. I mean, I like you said, everybody's experimenting with this, and I think Apple has talked a lot about stuff like AR, and you know, it's not a thing yet. I think it rarely even worth discussing, because what Apple has showed us to date is very much proof of concept. It is, as I've used the analogy many times before, it's telling you that there's this amazing world of integration and immersion, right? But it's always presenting that to you as though you are peeking in a window, because you are looking at it through your phone or your iPad, right? And that's fundamentally, it's like trying to show somebody a color movie when all they have is a black and white TV. Like, you can tell them everything about it, but it's just, there's no way, right? Or trying to demonstrate 3D images in a 2D image. It's like, you can't do it.
Right.
There's no way to demonstrate that.
Right.
So
ProMotion.
I think,
here's our 30 frames a second video of ProMotion.
Yeah, exactly.
What?
And so I think that until they have a device that actually lets you step into that world and immerse yourself, like walking through a door instead of peering in through the window, we're not going to know whether or not AR is a thing. And that doesn't guarantee that AR will even be a thing, right? But at this point, we can't even discuss it because
right.
I don't think we've seen what it actually looks like. And I think that is a technology of all the ones that we have sort of, you know, seen in terms of things, you know, next steps. That one I have a lot of questions about because I think it has some very cool potential to it, but at the same time, it is even more risky, I think, than the smartphone in terms of exactly the kind of stuff Tim Cook was talking about in his interview, which is the worry that you're always connected, that you're never more than a blink away from your Twitter feed or your Slack or your messages, your email, and I feel like there's probably even a discussion within Apple about, like, is this a thing that we want to do, right? Do we want to open the door to this world where we are connecting people, yes, but we're also sort of cutting them off from other aspects? Like, can we mix things instead of having the virtual take over your real life interactions? And I think the upside is that I think Apple is a company that does tend to think about these questions, unlike some other companies, which I think would just be like, oh, we can do this. Great. Let's do it. But I don't know. I think it's a big, big question about what the sort of future of technology and our interactions with technology are, because it could go very wrong.
Yeah, I have skepticism about it too, because of, I mean, you're exactly right. The whole idea of now people can look straight at you and be distracted and not paying attention. And that we're all looking at each other and nobody's paying attention because we've all got data. And it's not just wanting to not pay attention. It's also just being distracted by things flying into your face from wherever. And
I saw that Star Trek TNG episode.
Yeah, exactly. And the restraint, you know, how do you practice restraint? And you see Apple like experimenting with this, but we have not seen a lot of evidence that tech companies, or let's just be honest, human beings can show any restraint when it comes to getting more stuff put in their face on their smartphone. So why would we think it would be different on an AR device? I also have a lot of skepticism about it because it's not an input surface. Like the Apple Watch is a good example, right? Where it's a small screen, but it's also not really suitable for a lot of input because it's so small.
Yeah.
And the smartphone is great because that is a whole touch sensitive input surface. Now with an AR system, you're relying on voice or maybe gestures in the air and stuff. And it's not like it can't be done, because again, just like I'm not going to say never, I'm not going to say can't. I'm just going to say it's a lot harder problem. And I do wonder if Apple is sort of like, well, the AR thing is really going to just be on top of the smartphone that's in your pocket, because you'll pull that out to do your interactions.
Yeah. I think that's probably part of it. And I think that also potentially behooves it because it means that you can... We talked a little bit about, you know, in the past, the Apple Watch, when they first came out with it, and they're like, it does everything. It slices, it dices, it makes julienne fries. And it's
what,
like, turned
it
out,
do?
No, it's not great at all of those things. And so I think what this possibly opens up is the ability for Apple to create a device. And this is a very fine line to walk, right? Of saying that this device is good for certain applications. And they're like, that it can do certain things really well.
Yeah.
But we're not going to build in the capability for it to... It can't replace your smartphone, so we're not going to try to make it replace your smartphone.
But on an infinite timescale, I do want to be wary of the fact that, you know, I just said maybe smartphone is a better interaction thing than AR. In the short term, that's probably true. But what we've seen already with technology is, like, it's not hard to imagine the idea that if you want to... excuse me, if you want a control surface in an AR product in 15 years, you will literally not like hold out your fingers like you're holding a smartphone, and there will be a virtual smartphone in it, and you will trace, and it's basically like a little surface that doesn't actually exist, but looks from your AR perspective like it is a surface and lets you do all the tapping and swiping and whatever you want to do, while a whole other generation learns to just do it by doing like hand gestures and moving their wrists and stuff like that. Like, it's not it's not unreasonable to believe that could be a place that we're going, but I think it is a question of, one, it's the initial uptake of it, because although, you know, I wear glasses, the fact is lots of people don't wear glasses, and the human you know, human biology is a limiting factor. Human biology is a limiting factor. You got to shine things in people's eyes for them to see them, which means they need to put something on their head.
Yep.
And that's hard, right? That is a hard thing to overcome, because you're telling people to wear glasses who don't wear glasses, so that everybody's wearing glasses, so that everybody can have things that are shined in their eyes. It's not saying it won't happen. I'm just saying it's going to be hard to get consumer acceptance of a product like this. And when I keep thinking about AR, that's what I keep coming back to.
Sure.
Is I think AR stuff could be the next smartphone. But boy, even at the accelerated rate of our technology now, I don't see it happening anytime soon, because it's just not going to be good enough. It's going to be like the early days of PCs, where people didn't really even understand, like, personal computers. The mass of people didn't get personal computers until they'd been around for 20 years.
And I think the corollary there that's interesting to look at is voice control, which is something
which
that has become...
It's so bad. Ten years later, it's so bad still.
I know, that's
Siri,
the wild thing.
Yeah,
but it's easy to see how that could turn into something very powerful, even if it hasn't already. But it also suffers from the same sort of problems that you're just talking about with AR, not in the sense of having something on your face, but in the fact that socially, it's not acceptable necessarily to always talk things, or it's not always convenient, right? If I'm recording a podcast, I'm not going to be wanting to use voice control to do something while I'm doing that, right? It doesn't work in every circumstance. There are barriers to it. And I think that's one thing that has, you know, held it back in some places. It has also been largely held back by the technology, which people were like really excited about and then kind of stopped doing things with, or, you know, at the very least, that is a technology that requires some sort of quantum leap in order to get to a point where it's like, oh, we have really upped the how much these things can do. And in 10 years, as you said, it's gotten better, but it is not so much better that it is actually doing the things that we had hoped it would do. So I think that's still the ingredient, to my mind, of where technology is going. I think voice control is not going away, but I think what's keeping it from huge adoption is the technology is just not there yet.
Big thoughts for a Friday.
I know. This is October for you.
Yeah, I'm hoping that we'll get more, get some Macs to talk about too. But I think
that'd be nice.
I think it is. I think it's interesting to think about the big picture a little bit and all the ways that, because fundamentally, I believe that this is where the tech industry is right now, which is there is no next big thing. And while they're investing in the background on trying to find what the next big thing is, a lot of this is really like, well, we've got this bin full of parts that we invented in order to do hardware parts and software parts that we invented to do smartphones. Well, what else could we do with it? And Amazon's like, I know, a robot. Like, okay. Like, but everybody's trying that. Everybody's trying to think of that. Apple's like, a watch. Okay. All right. Like, they're sure. A TV, a thermostat, Amazon says a 15-inch diagonal picture that you hang on your wall that's actually a touchscreen. Like, everybody's trying stuff.
Sure. Yeah. It's going to be a lot of that.
Some of it will, like the Echo, some of it will be like, oh, this is a surprisingly successful ecological niche. None of them is going to be like a huge hit. And I think that comes back to the fact that a lot of product categories like ebook readers get judged because they're niche products. Mm-hmm. They get judged harshly because everybody's just looking for the next hit. And it's like, e-readers are a successful product category. They're just not for everybody, and that's fine.
I think this is the fundamental argument of the thing that I wrote next week is like, I think the future is kind of niche in some ways, right? Like having created this one device that does everything so well was like, well, what next? And the answer is maybe devices that do one thing really well that are kind of spread throughout your life and become more pervasive because of that. I think that the smart home and things like e-readers and things like the, you know, smart speakers and things like that have showed us like, what if you don't spend all of your time in front of a device trying to do all your stuff, but instead there are devices throughout your life that help you in the context in which you need them.
Right.
I think that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. Well, more big thoughts for a Friday. Hope everybody out there has a good weekend. Thank you for supporting Six Colors. We appreciate it. Maybe there'll be new Macs sometime soon, but maybe not. Who knows? But until then, bye, Dan.
Bye, Jason.